Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we are discussing the past, present, and future of PG&E, California's largest utility. Nearly 2.7 million people in Northern California were impacted by the company's planned power shutoffs, leaving them without electricity and heat last weekend. Many did not receive a paycheck because so many businesses had no choice but to shut down. PG&E has restored power to nearly all customers with no additional outages planned in the near term. But the company says we should expect blackouts for about a decade. So what are the alternatives to this? On today's Your Call, we are discussing the past, present, and future of PG&E. This summer, one of today's guests, The Wall Street Journal's Rebecca Smith, reported on documents she obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. And those documents revealed that PG&E has been aware that parts of its 18,500-mile transmission system were faulty and need to be replaced. PG&E's equipment sparked 19 major fires in 2017 and 2018, and the company was blamed for last year's campfire that destroyed the town of Paradise in Northern California and killed 86 people. On Tuesday, PG&E spokeswoman Tamar Sarkisian confirmed that at least 55 incidents of reported equipment damage were related to high winds during Saturday's power shutoff. She says the damage could have also sparked fires. Earlier this year, Senator Jerry Hill of San Mateo, whose districts include San Bruno, said he wants stern action against PG&E. In January, he said, quote, "I think some of PG&E's executives should possibly go to prison," end quote. Well, we reached out to PG&E, but we have not received a reply. The California Public Utilities Commission, the state agency that is supposed to regulate utilities, declined our interview request. And so today we are joined by two guests. Rebecca Smith is energy reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Hi, Rebecca. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, good morning, Rose.
Good morning. Thank you. We're also joined by Jamie Court, president and board chair of Consumer Watchdog. That's a nonprofit dedicated to providing a voice for taxpayers and consumers at a time when special interests dominate government and politics. Jamie Court is the author of three books, including his most recent, The Progressive's Guide to Raising Hell. Hi, Jamie. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, good to hear your voice.
You too, Jamie. You're joining us from Santa Monica?
Los Angeles.
Yes.
We moved because the rent was too high.
I'm sorry. Well, how are things down there? Because luckily, we're at about 45% containment? I need to look up the latest numbers. But luckily, the firefighters, first responders did an amazing job up here. What's happening down in L.A.?
Well, we're containing the Getty fire, which was the one in West L.A. that shut down the 405, but there's still mandatory evacuation orders that are just being lifted. But the problem is we've had a red flag, extreme red flag warning, the first issued for last night and tonight. So there have been some smaller fires that have broken out north of L.A. So the firefighters, the responders are doing an amazing job, but we're still fighting these fires, and it's going to be another long, long night with the winds being blowing very hard, and anything could happen. So people are really, really on alert right now.
Mm. Well, you know, I want to start off, since we're spending the hour talking about PG&E, I just want to talk about how this has affected people. Again, nearly 2.7 million people in Northern California were affected by these shutoffs. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, PG&E restored power to nearly all customers. Tomorrow is November 1st. This is when people have to pay their rent. And many people are afraid that they will not be able to do that. LA Times reporter Anita Chabria had a great piece. She traveled to Clear Lake, California. It's about 2.5 hours north of San Francisco. She reports that in that region, most people live paycheck to paycheck. And because they had to spend so much money on lost food and lost income, they're afraid that they might not make rent. And then a lot of small business owners spent thousands of dollars on generators to stay open, but not all of them could stay open. So, Jamie, first off, let's talk about the human aspects of this. Not even the people that were affected by the fires, but the people that were affected by the shutoffs.
Yeah, no, I think, and we don't have that kind of shutoffs down here, just so you know. There are some localized shutoffs, but it's nowhere near as extensive. I think it just shows how, when you have a company like PG&E that for 10 years really stonewalled, installed, and didn't invest in fire safety and vegetation management and modernization of equipment, it can shut an economy down. That, you know, this isn't just rhetoric. It's when you say they've, you know, captured a political environment, they've captured, you know, the Public Utility Commission, they've literally, you know, this is a company that's been convicted of six felonies. They've, in, you know, in San Bruno, in you know, going back to the Aaron Brockovich event, to Camp Fire, to Butte, to the Kincade Fire, we keep seeing the same pattern here. Now, there was a branch that fell, a eucalyptus tree, a branch fell on a power line, DWP power line in LA, that sparked the Brentwood Fire, and it was contained. But, you know, those things do happen. But what we're talking about in the case of PG&E is, you know, not repairing a 100-year-old tower that was supposed to be repaired after 75 years, and there, then we have the campfire. I mean, there's a very different level of culpability here, and it has shut down the economy. And I think for the human toll, there's got to be some way that, yeah, you know, creditors, people who are owed money, are going to have to. There's going to be a lot of give here. I mean, evictions should not be allowed, I'm certain. There's a law in insurance. It's called the vesting law, that if you get sick and you go in the hospital and you can't pay your insurance bill, you know what? Your insurance policy is still enforced. We don't really have that for all the sectors of the economy, for your rent, for your daily bills. But I think we're probably going to have to, it's probably going to just be some kind of, you know, a common law arrangement. If people are late and someone starts an eviction proceeding, the judges are going to take this into consideration. So it has so wrecked our economy that I think it's an interesting prelude to this discussion, that do you allow a company that's so big like PG&E not to fail when you know that the culture there, the corruption there is really ingrained, and they've caused so much damage that you wonder whether it ever can be fixed. And I think that the public, from what I can tell from the people I know who've been sitting in the dark and have suffered because of these, you know, they're not surgical blackouts, they're just whole swaths of blackouts, are ready to reevaluate this and start all over, because it's our fault if we allow it to happen again and the company betrays us again.
What about that, Rebecca? I've been in a couple of Facebook groups in Sonoma County where people have been affected by the shutoffs. And when they heard that the compensation that PG&E is offering is between $25 and $100, and this is for people who have gone without power for at least 48 hours, people were very, very angry. Have you been able to interview any PG&E execs about how they came up with this amount for compensation?
I have, and I don't really know where that number came from. And clearly it's not sufficient, particularly for operators of small businesses. And I think, you know, I think that these events in October have really shown that our systems are not set up to cope with this kind of a disaster, a man-made disaster. And I think there's a lot that's going to have to happen. This really was a wake-up call, not only to the insufficiencies of the power company, but also to the telecommunications companies and to any form of redress for people who've lost money. This has all got to be looked at very closely in coming months.
First let me give out the phone number, because a lot of people have questions about PG&E and opinions about where we need to go from here. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Rebecca, we had you on the show a couple of times now talking about the incredible reporting that you've done on PG&E. And you got your hands on many documents through the Freedom of Information Act, just telling us a lot about PG&E's business practices. What do we need to know? What really stands out for you when it comes to what PG&E has and has not done in the past? What are some of the major things that stand out for you?
I think a lot of it, Rose, boils down to a lack of accountability. You know, as some people know and many don't know, utilities typically go to a commission every 3 years and they ask for a certain amount of money that they say is what they need to run their system. But once they get that money, they're mostly free to spend it as they wish. They may say, you know, I need millions of dollars to redo this particular transmission corridor or these underground certain power lines. But whether they do it or not is up to them. And very, very rarely does the commission actually attach strings to that money. And I think this has allowed the company to do whatever it wanted. And we've seen repeatedly that they have deferred maintenance that should have been done. This is how you wind up with 100-year-old towers up in the Caribou-Palermo line, which, of course, produced the campfire. There simply has not been enough spending, and the company's had its focus on other things, like meeting the state's renewable energy targets, and those are important. But the nuts and bolts of running a utility, this is fundamentally what they what we pay them for.
So, Rebecca, when PG&E deferred maintenance, what happened at that point, and what could have the California Public Utilities Commission done about it?
Well, let's take one step back. We don't have a Public Utilities Commission that has the resources it needs. It doesn't have enough inspectors or auditors. So in many cases, a utility will say, here's what we think we need to do. And the commission will say, well, okay. They don't really have, it's not like they have metallurgical experts on staff who can go out and say, no, these clamps need to be replaced. They don't have that level of scientific expertise. So they often take a utility's word for what needs to be done. And then if the utility says, well, we didn't actually think we had to do it this fast, then that is accepted also. We need more accountability in the entire system for the utility and also for the regulator.
Has the California Public Utilities Commission ever investigated PG&E?
Oh, umpteen times. There are always multiple investigations going on. There are several now. They open a new one into the wildfire shutoffs, the power shutoffs. I mean, here's the issue is not that they haven't investigated. It's that they have many investigations. They often drag on for years. Sometimes they end rather inconclusively. And what we need is more rapid action. We need people to figure out what's broken and fix it and not just study the problems endlessly.
Jamie?
Well, I agree in part that the Public Utility Commission has been a horrible regulator, and there were two corruption scandals. One big one with President Pius, he was under criminal investigation, and there was a bribery scandal involving PG&E, and you know, and the state largely ignored it because PG&E has lavished contributions and junkets and a lot on legislators and on the governors. But I got to say, when you compare a company, and I'm no fan of Sempra, which is the parent of San Diego Gas and Electric, but you compare a San Diego Gas and Electric's response to 2007 fires to PG&E's response to every disaster it's been involved in, from San Bruno to the Camp Fire to the Butte Fire, you see a company like San Diego Gas and Electric actually investing in modernizing its grid, investing in sensors to detect fires, to be able to shut off power surgically, investing in planes, to investing in all the infrastructure over a course of more than a decade that's allowed it to handle what we are facing. There's no question this change that is indeed brought on by climate change more effectively, and to not turn off the lights on 3 million people because you haven't done any of that investment. So I am all for a tougher PUC, and I've told the governor that, and I think the governor gets that more than ever. But this company is probably one of the worst corporate actors I've ever seen, and I've fought oil companies, I've fought insurance companies, I've seen HMOs deny people coverage that they should have given them, and then they've died. And I will tell you that this is a serial felon, 6 felony convictions, and we are looking at $2 billion in fines that have been put on this company. We've seen falsifications of gas records for which it's facing a pending fine. We've had ex parte communications with the PUC, a $96 million fine, more than 150 deaths, billions in damages. And the balancing act here, the real-world balancing act, this company should not exist. If there is ever a candidate for the corporate death penalty, it is this company, in which case we need municipalization. As San Francisco wants to take over the assets, as San Jose wants to take over the assets, we should break it up and do that. The balancing act, on the other side of the equation, is there are wildfire victims who need to get paid. And if this company goes away, it's not clear who's going to pay the company's share to these victims. And the only reason this company is still in business, even with all the political support it's generated, is because there is a belief that if you keep them alive, wildfire victims will be made whole. And I don't really have an answer to this, question, but it is a question we have to confront as a society. I think we probably do need to make sure PG&E goes away. It's just there is a culture in the union, frankly, and in the corporate leadership, and it is not common among corporations, and is not even common among utilities, which are used to being unaccountable and not model corporate citizens. This company is particularly problematic, and I don't think there's any way to fix that. And if we let it go on another year without taking it over and trying to get municipal accountability, get civic accountability of the company, then whatever happens in a year or two is our fault, because we've been fairly warned.
What are your thoughts on this, Rebecca? Do you think, I mean, based on all of the reporting that you've done and the people that you've interviewed, is there any way to fix this company?
I think we should stop focusing on the company. We should think about the system. What matters is the electric system. Who runs it is of less consequence. We need a 21st century electric system in this state that's capable of providing the service we need. Now, whether that happens through an investor-owned company like PG&E, or whether PG&E's chopped up and other acquirers take pieces of it, whether there are municipal utilities, or, of course, the latest ideas to form a cooperative that would take over the entire 70,000 square mile territory. What form we use, to me, is of less importance than that we get the thing fixed. I would say one thing about San Diego Gas and Electric, and that is that it made changes to its system because it was ordered to by the Public Utilities Commission after the 2007 Witch Fire. That's one thing. Number two, it's a tiny, tiny utility compared with PG&E. It's basically one county. And as we know, PG&E is all of Central and Northern California. So the scale is just dramatically different. That's just a couple thoughts.
Can we talk about where PG&E failed in the past? You both talked about not repairing towers and other maintenance that could have happened. Let's just go over some of that. Rebecca, can you lay some of that out? What could PG&E have done in the past to deal with these issues that we're dealing with today?
So there's the wildfire issue, and that means you look at your system and you say, where are the greatest wildfire risks, and what's the state of our equipment in that area? And I want to just remind listeners that the state of California updated its fire maps within the last year, and it greatly expanded the proportion of PG&E's territory that's now considered at high fire risk. So no matter what they would have done, they would have had to do a reassessment. But anyway, we need to be looking at the state of equipment vis-a-vis wildfire risks, and we've not done that in the past. The companies looked primarily at where it needed to have the best infrastructure, and it usually looked at where it had the greatest population. And that's not an illogical approach to take, you know, in the past where we didn't have these risks. But there's got to be a comprehensive risk assessment that happens now. And that has not been the way utilities have thought about things in the past.
You got to appreciate that the reason they've just updated the fire maps is literally for nearly a decade, all the utilities, but particularly PG&E, stonewalled the regulatory process by which the PUC actually tried to update those maps, to the point that there was legislation in 2016 to require that those maps be updated, which passed unanimously and was vetoed by Jerry Brown, who took millions from the utilities, including PG&E, whose sister sat on the Sempra board of utility. I mean, PG&E actively delayed the updating of the fire maps, which would have required it to spend more money on vegetation management in more regions and modernization of equipment in more regions and perhaps burying the power lines in more regions. So that we cannot ignore the political relationships here, which is why the PUC doesn't work. The PUC doesn't work because PG&E and some of the other utilities, the other two utilities as well, have given an awful lot of money to get their desired public utility commissioners in place. And this has been proven in scandal after scandal and in emails that have been revealed that we put online in a website called PUC Papers. I mean, Jerry Brown's top two officials, his chief of staff was a former VP at PG&E who ran the effort against municipalization in a ballot measure that failed, even though PG&E spent $47 million to pass it and there was only $100,000 spent against it. She became the chief of staff. His cabinet secretary, Dana Williamson, is from PG&E. PG&E has really, during the Brown administration, owned it. And Jerry Brown has a lot of blood on his hands. This crisis we are facing now is because for 8 years at least, but honestly for many years before it, in the previous administration, the PUC was run by people who are close to the utilities. I mean, Mike Peavy came from Edison. You know, I mean, this was the PUC president. I mean, and he was involved in two efforts for two different utilities to cut him deals that, for which he was under criminal investigation. And we have not had a prosecution by our attorney general, have we? Oh, by the past two attorney generals of Mr. Peavy, even though his home was searched. I mean, the problem with PG&E and, frankly, the other two utilities is they have tremendous political influence. And so just saying we're going to hold them accountable ignores this culture of corruption I don't think you can ever get away with. And what PG&E should have done was what they're being asked to do in a criminal proceeding. This federal judge, Alsup, in Northern California, is enforcing a consent decree in which PG&E just came in a few days ago and said it did a review of its sites and found, I forget the numbers, but an inordinate number of them where fires would have been sparked if had they run power through them because they hadn't modernized. That type of oversight is being done through a federal court through a criminal consent decree because the state didn't do it for the last decade and a half. And I don't know how you turn that around. I think we have a better Public Utility Commission president. I think Gavin Newsom is dedicated, despite relationships with PG&E, to holding them accountable and the other utilities accountable for political survival and probably for other good reasons. I think he really cares. But that is, we got a lot to fix, and I have to believe that you cannot ignore the nature of those political relationships. A good example, and this is just really troubling, is every year in Maui in mid-November, a group called the Independent Voter Project hosts this shindig where last year, while the Woolsey fire burned and the campfire burned, executives from Edison and Sempra went there and hung out with legislators. And they reported it, and that's how we know about it. And they're doing it again, mid-November this year, and I'd love to see which legislators show up. PG&E had the sense to cancel after the campfire last year, but they still paid for the event. Who's going to show up mid-November while fires are ravaging California? Which state legislators? I guarantee you, if we talk about this December 1, there will be state legislators who show up in Maui to hang out poolside with utility executives at this junket, this educational junket. And that you can't change. That's how policy is made in this state. So creating municipal takeovers to the degree possible of these assets at least ensures local decision-making. It ensures that we have accountability. If we're investing in burying the lines, if we're investing in whatever transmission we need, at least there is some civic control over it. And while there's a lot of corruption locally, it's not quite the same as what we've seen with the utilities in Sacramento. And I don't think you can unring that bell.
That is Jamie Court, president of Consumer Watchdog, a nonprofit dedicated to providing a voice for taxpayers and consumers in an era when special interests dominate government and politics. We're also joined by Rebecca Smith, an energy reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Rebecca had a large investigation out this summer. She got her hands on documents obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request, and they revealed that PG&E has been aware that part of its 18,500-mile transmission system were faulty and needed to be replaced. On today's Your Call, we are talking about the past, present, and future of PG&E. It's California's largest utility. And I'm sure even for those of you who live outside of the state, you have heard about what's happening here, the horrific fires that are being contained thanks to the great work of firefighters and first responders. Nearly 2.7 million people were impacted by power shutoffs. PG&E just yesterday restored power to nearly all customers. But the company says we should expect these blackouts for the next decade. So where do we go from here? What kinds of changes would you like to see? Coming up after a break, we will take your calls and emails. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
You are listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. And if you prefer to write rather than call, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. Or leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about the past, present, and future of PG&E, California's largest utility. We did reach out to the company, but we have not received a reply. The California Public Utilities Commission, the state agency that is supposed to regulate utilities, declined our request. We're joined by Jamie Court, president of Consumer Watchdog, and Rebecca Smith, an energy reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Rebecca, I know you have to leave us in about 10 minutes, so I just wonder, what are your thoughts about what Jamie is saying about the very cozy relationship between politicians, PG&E, and the California PUC?
I think that a cozy relationship exists in most states. I don't think the exception is California. I mean, you know, utilities are among the oldest and often the oldest companies in states. They have the longest relationship with their state legislatures, and they have unbelievable influence and control. So, to me, that's just the way it is. But the question is, what can be done to provide more oversight and to provide more separation between the regulator and the regulated? And I don't think there's an easy solution to this. I think it's an endemic problem. PG&E, after all, dates back to 1852. How many other companies do we have with such a long relationship? So I agree. I think it's a real problem.
What can you tell us about the new head?
I can say that this is the only company that's went bankrupt twice and has felony convictions among all the utilities in America.
Rebecca, what can you tell us about the new head of the PUC? Maribel, is it Batcher?
I have not spoken with her, so I can't, you know, she appears to have good qualifications. I think she appears to be trying to do the right things, but I can't really speak to that directly.
State Senator Bill Nod from Napa, a wildfire legislator, said she's a problem solver, not a BSer. What do you know about her, Jamie?
I don't know much about her other than she came from the Schwarzenegger administration. She actually leans, I think, more Republican than Democrat, and she's known as a business person, you know, as a sort of professional, come in, clean up the corporate structure management type of person. That's how she got in government under Schwarzenegger, and that's how she got into the PUC, because they needed someone like that to fix the mess there.
Well, that's
a reputation. I can't personally attest to it, but that's what people say about her.
All right. Well, and I should mention again, we did reach out to the PUC, but they declined our request to join the show. We have an email from Nico who says, I own restaurants in San Rafael and Dublin. Those were shut down for a total of 5 days between them this past week. We lost $40,000 in sales. We paid none of our employees, who are now out 2 to 3 days of wages, and we will pay no taxes because we had no income. We also lost about $10,000 in inventory, such as food and alcohol, that we had to discard. We, of course, still have to pay rent, insurance, and other operating costs. How does this help anyone? Nico goes on to write, a few years ago, the California prison system was placed in receivership due to its gross negligence and willful misconduct. Why can't California take over PG&E and place responsible executives in charge of it? What's your response to that, Rebecca?
Well, there's a takings clause in the Constitution. You can't just take over private property. I suppose there are conditions under which eminent domain could be asserted. I don't think the state wants to go that direction. I think I understand his, you know, this is a catastrophic event for people running businesses, and my heart goes out to them. I don't know what the solution is for them, but I don't think we're going to see the state taking over. I do think, as Jamie mentioned earlier, we have this very interesting situation with a federal judge, William Alsup, who has been presiding over the probation agreement that PG&E entered into after the San Bruno explosion and its criminal convictions. He's doing probably more than anybody right now to try to make the utility get its act together. And he also, as a federal judge, has enormous powers. There's more that he could be doing to force change at that company. But I don't know that there's anything being contemplated right now that helps the thousands of people who've had financial losses.
Well, Nico, thank you for calling, and I'm so sorry to hear about your business. I mean, for those of us who live in the area, now is a great time to go support small businesses, small restaurants, really you know, try to give them your business over the next, well, it's many, many months. I mean, it's a good reminder of why it's so important to support our small businesses in the area, but especially right now. And Nico, we will definitely do a show about the losses in the coming weeks to find out just how people are coping and what, if anything, can be done about that. Rebecca, before we let you go, what can be done at this point? People are really angry. They want public utilities in cities to take over, to provide energy to citizens. What can be done?
Well, this may sound weak, and I apologize if it does, but we're in a democracy, I think, still. I don't think it's been eliminated yet. And I think that people need to use those tools. They need to go to their elected representatives, whether it's at their city council or the county commission or their state legislators. They need to go to the PUC. They need to make public officials understand how harmful this has been and how concerned they are about it, and not just let things go back to normal once we all have power back. Mm. This is going to keep coming around back at us. We're not out of this yet. And I think that we need to make a local and state government answerable to us.
Well, Rebecca, thank you for your reporting, and thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's Rebecca Smith, energy reporter for the Wall Street Journal. She conducted a major investigation this summer revealing that PG&E has been aware that parts of its 18,500-mile transmission systems were faulty and needed to be replaced. Sticking with us for the rest of the hour is Jamie Court, president of Consumer Watchdog. It's a nonprofit dedicated to providing a voice for citizens at a time when special interests dominate government and politics. And Jamie recently, he's written a number of pieces about PG&E for media outlets and Consumer Watchdog. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Again, we did reach out to PG&E. We have not received a reply, and the California PUC declined our interview request. Jamie, what are your thoughts? What can happen right now?
Well, I believe, I've been working on democracy for 30 years in California, and it is hard. People are letting their elected officials know how angry they are, and the elected officials just have to talk to their neighbors. The question is, where can we focus all this energy? Where can we focus this anger? And, you know, there's no question that if the state wants to take over PG&E, it can through eminent domain. It can be done at the local level, and it's already happening. San Francisco made a bid to take over a municipal ownership of transmission and generation, and it was about $2.4 billion bid. PG&E rejected it before these were fires, saying it was too little. Everyone I know said it was too much, but now I think the city attorney is considering how to use eminent domain to take over those assets and probably get those assets cheaper. The city of San Jose wants to take over the PG&E assets there. The real problem with the municipalization is there are rural regions that can't afford to do what San Francisco and San Jose wants, which is actually pay, you know, fair market value for those assets. And that's where the state's going to have to come in to come up with some idea to help those regions. But I absolutely think that has to happen. And I think the governor has to drive that solution. And I think the governor could act even quicker if he needed to. If this keeps going, he can invoke eminent domain. He can drive a solution that is more than regional, more than, you know, municipal. Remember, PG&E's in bankruptcy court, so mm-hmm. The other options or someone else buys them. And I hear many in the state are pushing for Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett, to pick up PG&E. The stock fell down to $5. I think it was as low as $3.50 per share from, you know, a high of, I don't know, maybe $30 or $40. I don't think we should give it to Berkshire Hathaway. I don't think we should give it to Buffett. Buffett has utilities called PacifiCorp. In the Northwest, in Nevada, there are a lot of coal in those in that portfolio. I think the public should take this over, because the reality is we're paying the price for the lack of oversight, the neglect, the culture of corruption. I mean, that restaurant owner, that was real money. Mm. These are real lives, and people have died. And that gives the state, that gives municipalities every reason to go in and demand these assets become public and pay a fair market value for them. And we should just, I think we should effectuate that as quickly as possible. But we need our elected leaders to lead. Jerry Hill's a great senator, cannot do it alone. I think the governor needs to come around to this position. And we've all been trying to get him there, people in my side. There was an idea floated today on Vice Media that is about people stop paying their PG&E bills. And the idea is based on, I'm not sure I endorse it, I'm just voicing it. It's based on an economist, Yanis Varoufakis, the former finance minister of Greece, in which, you know, the idea is if you go on a strike and you don't pay PG&E, their stock falls to zero, and then the public can take them over real easy and real cheaply. And the bankruptcy court may have to effectuate that. Now, there's risk in that. As I said a little earlier, you know, PG&E's not, but it needs to pay wildfire victims. So if we kill its assets, it's not clear how wildfire victims are going to get paid and their homes restored, because we're not insurance policy. They don't have enough insurance to cover all that. So there are complications with that solution. But believe me, if elected officials don't figure out a radical plan to deal with this company and get it under public control, then I do believe people with a couple more weeks like this over the next few months are going to start taking these matters in their own hands and stop paying the bills. The idea is it's a little more complicated than, you know, the stock just collapsed. The idea is if people won't pay PG&E, that over the years they've collateralized a lot of these sort of utility payments. You know, these utilities are regulated monopolies. And the thing about regulated monopolies are they get a rate of return, and they know they're going to get payments every, you know, every month, right, from customers, and so they're real safe. And so they bond out or, you know, securitize those prospective payments, and if people stop agreeing with that social compact to make their payments because there's no trust in PG&E, then that whole municipal scheme falls apart. And that's one way to make public takeover a reality. It's probably a very radical way. And I'm not saying we should go there, but I'm hundreds of miles from you, and I know the anger up there is palpable.
Yeah.
And the public is ready for this. The governor feels it. In politics, you have to anticipate this. You can't wait for people to take matters in their own hands in some radical way, like stop paying PG&E. But I can tell you, in a month from now, if we're doing this all over again, it's not just going to be me raising this idea, and it's going to be a lot of people endorsing it.
Well, Jamie, we've got a number of callers and people emailing in, so let's take a few, and then we'll get you to respond. Let's hear from Mark in San Leandro. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm not going to take up your time because the gentleman who was just on said it all. But, you know, I don't know what's radical. Elizabeth Warren saying and Bernie Sanders in the bigger picture are saying, you know, let's get rid of these private health companies that have been after people for decades. And you've got PG&E, which last year, I think there were dividends of $1.5 billion, and there's $30 billion in arrears. What are those assets worth?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mark. We'll get a response in just a minute. Let's go to Tim in Berkeley. Hi, Tim.
Hi there. I agree that PG&E is a felon, corporate felon, needs to be broken up, and that municipal utility districts are needed. The problem is, how do people get paid who've already lost, both the victims of the fires and the victims of the PG&E outages? Are we talking micro districts? Are we talking a breakup of the Western utility centers? How do we transmit power safely? I mean, there's PG&E's bad, but we're stuck in a climate crisis where normal means of distributing power are basically dangerous. I'll just throw that out there and take my question offline.
All right, thank you. Why don't you take that one now, Jamie?
Well, look, I do think the problem, frankly, is PG&E. We don't have 3 million people without power in L.A. We have a municipal utility down here, LADWP, that has lots of problems, but safety actually isn't one of them. They've got huge billing problems and some public corruption problems, but they actually do a good job of vegetation management and modernization of equipment, so they don't spark many fires. We have Edison, which is not a model utility, but frankly, it's doing a lot better than PG&E. And I know we have a little bit more rural turf up there, there's no question, but we have some pretty unincorporated areas here that are prone to fires, and they manage it. And so I think that this is not a grid problem, and this isn't a climate change problem. The first thing that the governor said when this crisis started, and I said the same thing, is this is not about climate change. The reason they're shutting the lights off in Northern California is not about climate change. It's about PG&E not preparing and modernizing for the realities of climate change the way the community of San Diego prepared. And I know Rebecca says it's a smaller community, but it actually is a pretty large community. And if it can be done in San Diego, it can be done in Northern California. There's, if you bury the lines, if you use sensors, if you on the over-the-ground transmission lines, if you have surveillance of your system, you can surgically accomplish power outages without inconveniencing millions of people. You may inconvenience 10,000 people at a time, but you're not going to shut down an economy. You're not going to shut down a region. That's what PG&E did. PG&E shut down the Northern California economy for a week or more, and that is more than a wake-up call. You know, that is a referendum on the company. And I am all for an emergency session of the legislature in December to figure a way to publicly take over this company or buy it. It's down to $5. It's going to go down to $3 or $2. It's a cheap fire sale. Go in the bankruptcy court. Let's grab it.
Who will run it at that point? I mean, who will be in charge at that point?
Berkshire, well, anyone who realizes the assets are worth tens of billions of dollars, which they are. The transmission assets, the generation assets are worth tens of billions of dollars. But there's no public faith in the brand. There's no public faith in the culture. So the assets are there. Some of it's been securitized. But I'm certain that Warren Buffett's going to want this company. He's just waiting to see how low it'll go.
So then,
and I'm certain that people in Sacramento would rather give it to Warren Buffett than take control of it themselves and then have responsibility when the lights go out, because they may have to go out again. But the right thing to do is take that responsibility, because we're not going to be able to trust another private corporation to fix this mess.
How can we? So then, once a takeover happens, it's some people are saying this is ridiculous to think that Warren Buffett would buy this. But how would we know that they would do the major upgrades that are needed to ensure that this doesn't happen? Because at the end of the day, we really have an equipment crisis right now.
Right, then we're putting our faith in the Public Utility Commission to make sure they do. And, again, trusting them with, you know, resources that PUC may or may not have, but I certainly believe even if it has the will, it doesn't always have the way. The only way to do this, to know we can get it done, is when you put it in, when you do municipalization or have government control over it, because then someone's job's on the line and some elected official's on the line if something goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to be honest that things will go wrong. But we never want to be back to where we were this last week. That's what the goal has to be. We have to invest. Plus, frankly, the state of California has tens of billions of dollars that it can invest in burying power lines, in putting sensors on transmission lines. It has the capital to do this. And if we invest in it, then, you know, we get the ratepayer money. Whether it's the state or whether it's municipalities. And I don't see why we wouldn't do that. Municipal utilities do much better than investor-owned utilities, both on rates, both on safety. And, I mean, SMUD in Sacramento, I mean, DWP, like I said, there's issues with it, but it doesn't involve safety, and we're still paying less than Edison customers are. So it is the smart way to go, but it is risky politically, because government is often not effective at doing things. But it's also more honest and public and transparent about what needs to be done. The problem with PG&E is all these corporate secrets get buried. And when you have a company in San Bruno that diverts money from, you know, fixing gas pipelines that it was obligated to fix in order to give executives bonuses, which it did, and then, you know, is convicted criminally and then goes and does a campfire again. I mean, the corporate culture is not accountable. The government and municipal cultures are all about accountability. And so you're going to have a very different type of culture driving the change, and you're going to have, frankly, huge amounts of assets. We have a lot of surpluses in the state, and we may just need to spend a lot of it on these upgrades so this doesn't happen again. And that just may be why we have a government, as opposed to leaving everything to private corporations.
I want to read another comment from Patty, who's writing in from Pine Grove. Patty writes, I live in a semi-rural area in the Sierra foothills. We are on a well for our water. PG&E turned off our power on the 26th at about 5:30 p.m. and finally restored it yesterday at 4 a.m. During this time, we have minimal wind. We must fill our bathtubs and reserve as much water as possible. This means no water, period. Those living on the grid still had water and gas to heat the water, enabling them to bathe and cook. PG&E reported on its website several conflicting restore times and cutoff times. We were never given a window. For those of us who work, this meant going to work for 4 days without a bath or being able to cook a meal. It put us in a very powerless situation, feeling helpless. The idea that $25 to $100 will cover our cost of lost food, generator, gas, and wages is degrading and a pathetic solution to a very serious issue. Well, thank you for writing in with your story, Patty. We reached out to PG&E. I really would like to know how they came up with this $25 to $100 number. But as I said, they did not get back to us. I mean, Jamie, what about that? People who are out of power for 5 days, no work, in this case, no shower, not being able to cook a meal?
Yeah, it's beyond imagination. It's beyond business as usual, you know, and clearly, you know, $25 to $100 was some type of political solution that was at least something, but it obviously isn't going to get to the heart of the problem. And I'm sure this family would rather know that there's a solution in place that it never happens again rather than getting $100, you know, which if 1 million people get $100, that's $100 million that could be invested in something else. So it's not nothing. But and it does make the company pay, but ultimately we're the ones paying because the company gets its money from the ratepayers. Look, I think there's two solutions long term. One is solar, where it's available, where rooftop solar has been a real deal breaker for the utilities. The utilities have been really concerned about rooftop solar putting them out of business, particularly in places like Southern California or sunnier places. And there are now battery storage facility for solar on a larger level. And the fact that that in the rural areas where solar is available and we can incentivize rooftop solar, we might be able to solve quite a few of the problems with if we can municipalize in more concentrated areas and deploy solar in unincorporated, more rural areas, which are higher risk of fire and don't have the money really to take over those assets. We might be able to do two good things at once. But the fact is, this is not a solution. $100 retribution is not a solution. Neither is you know, anything we can do to regulate PG&E right now. And there was just some appointments made this week to the Wildfire Commission that was created out of some legislation to try to pay the victims of the fires prospectively. And, you know, I see a lot of the same, you know, PG&E engineers and people who are involved in the finance end of the private utility market. And, I mean, you know, if we keep talking about Warren Buffett, if we keep talking about going down the road we have, we're going to have more of these crises and people are going to feel more and more out of control. We really need to just stop and let PG&E go. And if their stock is really, really low, then maybe there's a really, really smart solution to do that. And I think the governor needs to convene a task force that goes with Plan B. Because Plan A is not going to, you know, Plan A is going to, if you believe PG&E, solve this problem within 10 years. That's what PG&E said the other day. We'll have this in control in 10 years. We can't wait 10 months, let alone 10 years. So we need a Plan B. And Plan B is put a guy like Jerry Hill and some other people who have no loyalty or fealty to PG&E in charge of how we do a public takeover.
And again, Jerry Hill is a state senator from San Mateo who said, I think some of PG&E's executives should possibly go to prison. Jamie, we have an email from Chris who says San Francisco has been in contempt of federal law, the Raker Act, and complicit with PG&E's criminal control of our electricity system since at least the 1941 U.S. Supreme Court 8-1 decision mandating publicly owned wholesale electricity for San Francisco. We owe them nothing. Forget the $2.4 billion offer. They've made their money dozens of times over. Time to seize their assets as reparations for the century of theft and make it a publicly owned cooperative.
I think that's something that the city attorney, Dennis Herrera, is probably very open to, and I would be surprised if he's not preparing a plan to use eminent domain to take over the assets that San Francisco generously tried to buy with $2.4 billion a few weeks ago, and PG&E said no to. Which was really remarkable because it was an overpriced offer in bankruptcy court. The bankruptcy court approved it. that's the thing. PG&E does not want to let go of these assets. It is struggling to maintain its corporate structure because corporations do this because of their structure. They want to maintain shareholder value. They want to make, you know, what will the executives do and how will they get paid if they sell off their assets? Or if they don't sell off their assets to Warren Buffett, who gives them a job after the fact. I mean, that's the problem with this corporation. It's got huge secrets, and it's got huge and not very constructive, loyalties from the people who run it. And so, you know, it is all these municipalities are doing the right thing. San Francisco is now doing the right thing. San Jose is doing the right thing. We need leadership, frankly, from the governor to, when these fires die down, take a breath, stand back, and ask himself the question of whether we can really afford to not have public control of this company, because this will happen again. And if it happens again, the answer can't be another $100. It really needs to be, yes, I'm sorry, but here's what we're doing. We've taken over this company. Here's how we're more surgically determining whose power goes out. Here's what we're doing to modernize. Here's a timetable to finish the modernization. That's not 10 years. Here's what we're investing with state assets. The state of California is putting $1 billion into this company, and we're hoping to get it back from ratepayers. But we're making that investment because we know we need to bury the power lines here and repair these 100-year-old towers there. And this whole inventory of equipment that was just given to Federal Job Alsup about, you know, those areas that will spark a fire, we're modernizing that. I mean, the way it works now is, you know, we rely on PG&E to do all those things, and they don't do them. And then we rely on the PUC to hold PG&E accountable to that, and they either don't or can't. We really just need the accountability centered in government. Now, that is a risky thing for a politician to do, because then it means they own the problem. But it is the right thing to do, frankly. It's the right thing to do. Just like, you know, the Tennessee Valley Authority, it's a publicly owned utility. PG&E has a lot of valuable assets. We should take them over. We should leverage them, and we should modernize as a state. And we should find a way to make government work so that it accomplishes that with realistic expectations from the public that there's going to be a lot of inconvenience. But we're going down the right path now. We're not letting PG&E determine our future.
Well, Jamie, we're out of time, but we will continue covering this issue. Thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate the conversation.
Jamie Court is president of Consumer Watchdog. I should also mention that we did invite PG&E to join us. They did not get back to us. We also invited the California Public Utilities Commission to join us, and they declined our requests. Thanks to everyone who wrote in and called today, especially those of you who called in with personal stories about how all of this has affected you. If you have any show ideas, anything that we should discuss in the coming weeks about this issue, please email yourcall@kalw.org. This is Your Call. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar.